Hey folks, welcome back to the second ever TL Talks podcast. This podcast, I'd like to touch on a few things. So briefly, I'd like to talk to you guys about the Browns and Ohio State, since those are my teams. And then we're going to dive into women's football, specifically women's tackle football, which a lot of people don't know about and a lot of people should know about. So I'm going to do my best, try to educate you guys a little bit to give you a little head start on what you should know about women's tackle football in the United States. So let's start with my beloved Browns. So I know what you're thinking. Let me go ahead and take the words out of your mouth. You're thinking, oh, TL, what happened? Your beloved Browns, you know, Super Bowl hopefuls, yada, 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 got whooped at home against the Titans. Yep, they sure did. I watched that shit live, and it was not an enjoyable 3 hours for me. Here's the deal. I'm a diehard Browns fan. I don't have a fair weather bone in my body. I'm not going anywhere, win, lose, or draw. That game was really hard to watch. Pretty much, I wouldn't say it's worst case scenario. Worst case scenario would be Baker Mayfield's hurt. But it was pretty bad. You know, the score was embarrassing. Just a lot of things didn't go well. We had, I think, the second most penalties we've ever had in our history. I think 18 penalties. I'm not sure if any football team's ever won a football game with 18 penalties. Our left tackle got ejected, so that was lovely. Then our backup left tackle got injured, also lovely. After that, you heard the announcers say that we literally have five healthy linemen, like, total. And so, yeah, just a lot of things didn't go well. We didn't execute. We played really good run defense in the first half. But in the second half, the game kind of got away from us. And then we, you know, had a big deficit. Then Baker started forcing passes, throwing picks, pick sixes. Then the score got out of hand. So the good news is I am not suicidal. All jokes aside, I don't believe in suicide anyways. But I'm not too down, because my confidence in Baker Mayfield and Freddie Kitchens is so unwavering that it can't be defined by one game, just plain and simple. So I still feel the same way I felt before the first game. I just think that game was a good wake-up call for our team to let us know where we're at, where we need to, you know, make fixes. And I can't wait for Monday Night Football. I think that we're going to play much better against the Jets. I feel very strongly that we'll beat the Jets. And, yeah, I just think all around it's just going to be a better game. I think Baker will play much better. Our whole team will play much better. And I can't wait to get our first win. So, moving on to Ohio State. Ohio State played their second game this past weekend. And they played Cincinnati. So Cincinnati was supposed to be our first test. Interesting game, because we were playing against, I think his name's Luke Fickell. He is the head coach of Cincinnati now, and he used to be a coach for Ohio State. So kind of interesting storyline there with, you know, playing against your former coach. But unfortunately for Cincinnati, that game was not competitive, and it was not a test for Ohio State at all. I mean, I watched most of the game, and in the beginning of the game, Cincinnati was, you know, keeping it competitive and making us earn stuff. But then as the game wore on, we just were kind of scoring pretty easily and stopping them on defense. And it was a pretty – I mean, I think the final was like 42-0. So really decisive win for Ohio State, and really encouraging, you know, going forward. This game we have this weekend is against Indiana, and Indiana is actually undefeated as well. They're 2-0. And so I'm looking forward to that game, because we're both 2-0. I think it's at Indiana. I still feel – very confident in Ohio State because of how we played against Cincinnati. So I think that we'll not only win, but win pretty decisively. But, you know, predictions are predictions. You have to play the game. So I'm looking forward to that game as well. So Ohio State on Saturday, Browns on Monday. Can't wait. So now moving on to the meat of the podcast. I'm going to talk to you guys about women's tackle football. Now, if you don't know about women's tackle football, I don't blame you. You know why? Because about 6 years ago, neither did I. And neither does most of America's population, to be honest with you. And so that's not, it's kind of sad. We're definitely working on it, trying to get more exposure, you know, for the sport, but we still have a long way to go. And so, first of all, there's no shame in not knowing, but let's go ahead and start so I can start educating you guys and you can become fans of the sport like I am. So, women's tackle football. First, let me clarify. When I say tackle football, I'm not talking about lingerie. I'm talking about real football. I'm talking about them wearing full pads, 11 on 11. Literally, in the women's leagues that I've coached in, the only difference in how they're playing the game is the ball that they're using, because women have smaller hands than men in general, and so they use a smaller ball. Besides that, everything else is the same. They're using, you know, they have college or NFL rules. It's 11 on 11. You know, everything else is the same. They have officials. Everything else is legit. So it is real football first and foremost. I'm not a fan of lingerie football. I don't coach lingerie football. It's not that. So please don't get that misinterpreted. So now that we know it's real football and that women are playing it, you might ask, who's playing it? The answer to that would be women basically 18 and up, with a few exceptions. I know that there was a girl that played in Kansas City named Brooke Liebsch, and she was playing, I think, at age 16, and she was kind of the exception to the rule because her parents were able to, like, sign off on her playing, basically, you know, because she was a minor. And so she's a very rare case, but in general, you know, the players are 18 and up. So, and my former team that I was coaching, I think our youngest player was around 21 years old, and our oldest player was in her upper 40s. She was actually a grandma, literally. And with my newer team that I'm coaching now, called the Denver Bandits, their youngest player was, I want to say, around 19 years old, with their oldest player being somewhere in her 40s. And so that's kind of the age range that I've seen, you know, give or take, on teams that I've coached and teams that I've encountered. So that's kind of the age range of the women that are involved. So these leagues, I'm going to talk about two leagues, because there's two leagues currently that are national leagues, right? So they have teams from coast to coast. There's more than two leagues total, but these are the two leagues that are, in my opinion, far ahead of all the other leagues as far as, you know, branding and having enough teams to run, you know, a national league coast to coast, basically. So with that being said, let's dive into the leagues. Those two leagues are, the league that I'm in is called the WNFC. WNFC was literally created last year. Brand new league. It was started by a group of people, but mainly the figurehead of that league is a woman by the name of OJ Jenkins, who is a Hall of Famer in her own right. She's played football for a long time. She's a great, if she still played, she would be, but she was a great running back. Her favorite player is Barry Sanders, and she was very Barry Sanders-esque when she played. Very good player for a lot of years, and then finally she kind of wanted to transition from a player to a coach, and she was kind of in a tough spot because there was the other league called the WFA. Then before this, there was another league called the IWFL. IWFL didn't do a great job of how they ran things, and a few of the top teams in that league decided they wanted to, leave that league. But they didn't necessarily want to join the WFA, and so that kind of put them in a tough spot because they didn't know where they're going to go, and that's how the WNFC was created. So it was created last year. I was fortunate enough that I was invited to one of the first meetings. It was in Plano, Texas, where they kind of got a lot of the people in the same room, basically, that were involved in, you know, the creation of the league. And let me tell you, I talked to OJ Jenkins through like a little chat thing on the computer. She gave me, you know, some details about the league, And I was impressed. I was like, wow, this all sounds great. You know, I'm looking forward to finding out more. And she invited me to that meeting to kind of get filled in on the scoop. So when I went to the meeting and she gave more details on the league and how it's going to be ran and what their, you know, long-term visions are, I was just blown away. I left that meeting blown away. Like, you know, just, it just completely superseded anything that I had expected. So super stoked about everything I heard. It's almost too hard to believe, but I was hoping for the best. I know, you know, from what I know of OJ, she's, you know, she doesn't bullshit, you know, like she does what she says she's going to do. She is very passionate about football, women's football. She wants to see women's football advance and become, you know, much more exposed and much more professional. And she wants to see, you know, players be paid and stuff like that. So I knew that her heart was in the right place. It was just a matter of if she could, you know, basically follow through with these things that she was saying at the meeting. So since I have a pretty high opinion of OJ Jenkins, I was very optimistic about, you know, this, all this stuff being legit. You know, none of it seemed like fool's gold. And so I was super stoked. It's kind of put me in a tough spot because that year I wasn't coaching football. And so I didn't know what I could do for them basically, because I was just an unemployed coach in, you know, Colorado. And so I told them I would help in any way that I could, but I wasn't sure what that would be. So let me tell you more about the league. So the WNFC, like I said, has been around for 1 year. Currently, they have about 20 teams, okay? So one of the things that's different about that league is they have a professional model that they want to kind of mirror, right, the best of the best. So obviously the best of the best is the NFL. So unlike the WFA, which I'll tell you about them in a second, they have a cap on how many teams that they're willing to have in their league, because they're not interested in having, you know, a ridiculous amount of teams, because they feel like it kind of waters down the product of women's football. So with that being said, last I heard, they put a cap on the number of teams at 30. Now, I thought they were going to cap it at 32 because NFL is 32, but they said 30, which is totally fine. But currently, there's about 20 teams in the league, roughly. I think last season when my team played the Denver Bandits, there was somewhere between like 14 and 16 teams, I think, total in the league. And the reason that there was that many is because they were starting on the west side of the United States first. So something you'll realize about the WNFC, they're very methodical, and everything is with a purpose. Like, nothing is just, you know, off the, you know, just like winging it. So everything is with a purpose. And so they started with the western side of the United States, and they got some, you know, some pretty big teams. I mean, Seattle Majestics is a really quality team, LA Bobcats, San Diego Surge, Texas Elite Spartans, a lot of these really good teams that are established, and got them all on board to join this league. And then they had some good quality teams from the East Coast too, like the Atlanta Phoenix and Nebraska Nighthawks and stuff like that. So some pretty quality teams, a great, you know, starting point for the league. And like I said, they had about, you know, between 14 and 16 teams first year. First year went great. I can only speak for what I've seen so far. There was no forfeits in the first year, which is really hard to do, you know, with just how things happen. You know, some teams have roster attrition. They can't make away trips, you know, you name it. And so the in other leagues, you know, forfeits are pretty common. So the fact that they didn't have any forfeits in year one is phenomenal. The WNFC is sponsored by Adidas and Riddell in their first year, which is phenomenal. So what I mean by that is these sponsorships, they equal like real dollar amounts, right? So like when I say that, I mean, during our championship weekend, you know, they were giving out like grants for thousands of dollars. They gave us, you know, free equipment, free, you know, like I was a coach at the All-Star game and I got like a free pair of shoes and free hoodie and sweatpants and stuff like that, just because I was a part of it. You know, it's just a perk of being in that league. So all that stuff is super cool. They were able to pay out the WNFC Players of the Week, $250, I think it was. Yeah, $250 for Players of the Week during the season, which isn't a ton of money, but it's something, right? Like, you're going from these women players, they're not being paid to play football. It's quite the opposite, actually. They're paying to play football, which really is sad. But in this case, the Players of the Week were getting money back, which is really dope. I was told from a reliable source that teams were given roughly about $4,000 from the league to help with expenses, which is also unheard of. In other leagues, they're taking money from you, and you're not getting much in return. So there's just a lot of things. I know I'm going to sound biased because I'm in that league and I'm a big fan of it. But, I mean, if you want to argue, we can argue. But I think the league's awesome. I think the number one thing for me that's been so refreshing about them is their transparency. They are just very, blunt and forward about what they're doing, when they're doing it, how they're doing it. And I've never seen that before. I've never seen it in other leagues. I've never seen it in semi-pro men's football here in Colorado. I've been involved with semi-pro pretty, intensely for the last 6 years. And all this stuff I just never seen before. So I love their transparency. It's so refreshing. The fact that they're paying money to players for Player of the Week. The fact that we're already sponsored by Adidas and Rydell. And those sponsorships are just only going to get better because it's just, it's escalating. It's like, let's say in year one, they say, okay, we want 30% of your players to be in, Rydell helmets. And then in year two, it has to be 60%. And then year three, it's 90%. And then year four, it's 100%. So as long as you meet those, landmarks, then their sponsorship, they'll do their end if you do your end, basically. Is the way I understand it. And so all this stuff is only going to get better. We've already received, discounts on equipment, discounts on apparel, some grants, money, and all that stuff is only going to get better in the future. So what they've been able to do in the first year, I think, is really groundbreaking. I know that sounds cliche, but I've just been super impressed. You can call me biased if you want, but I just am really stoked. I know it sounds cheesy, but I'm honored just to be a part of it. Like, I think that this league is, just really, really commendable. I think that it was long overdue. I wish that somebody had done this, 10 or 20 years ago. So this was the norm when I joined. But that wasn't the case. Nobody did. And so here we are. But that is the WNFC. Like I said, they have about 20 teams. There's been some teams that have come over from other leagues in the offseason and some leagues that have teams that have formed in the offseason that have joined the WNFC. And so they're closer to 20 teams now currently. And that, I think that's all I wanted to tell you guys about the WNFC. Let's see. I told you about the teams. I guess the last thing I would say is just their vision for the future, and I'm not trying to speak for them. They can correct me when they come on for interviews. But I think their vision for the future is just to raise the bar, to be a more professional brand of women's football, to make women's football something that people want to watch, something that people want, is viewable and marketable and can be supported financially. And so the goal is, for women to be treated like professionals, to be paid like the men are. And, we're a long way away from that right now, but you got to start somewhere. And so I'm very privileged to be a part of it. And so it's kind of cool to be there, in the beginning stages. So moving on to the other big league in the United States, it's WFA. WFA is the league that I was in with my former team. I was in the WFA, I think, in our third year. And so I left that team. And WFA, I used to be a huge fan of them because when it was WFA and the IWFL as the two leagues, it wasn't close as far as who was the better league. So it's kind of easy to be a WFA fan. And I was a huge advocate for them. And, let me give you a quick rundown. So WFA, unlike the WNFC, has a lot of teams, a lot more than 20 or, their 30 cap I don't think they really have a cap, to be honest with you. But currently, I'm pretty sure that the WFA has between 60 and 70 teams. So if you think you misheard me, you didn't. That's between 60 and 70 teams total in their league. Now, these teams are from coast to coast, but they are, how do I put this? Well, let me just give you more details. So in the WFA, there's three tiers. Okay, just like in college football, there's Division 1, 2, and 3. In the WFA, there's, you know, Tier 1, 2, and 3. So it's tomato, tomato. But when I checked the website earlier today just to kind of get my notes together, I can tell you that the WFA, I believe they ended this season with seven teams in D1. I'm calling it D1 because it's easier. So seven teams in D1. 18 teams in D2, and 39 teams in D3. Now, since the season ended, things have changed, right? Some teams have left for the WNFC. Some teams have folded. Some teams have been created. You know, it happens every offseason. So those numbers aren't accurate currently. But those are the numbers as that last season concluded. So with that being said, you know, 7 in D1, 18 in D2, 39 in D3. So you see there's, you know, it's bottom heavy, right? There's a ton of D3 teams and not so much for D1. I just found out recently that the Kansas City Titans unfortunately folded their operations, so they're no longer a team, and so that was one of the seven D1 teams for them. So that kind of hurts because they didn't have many to begin with. But then for D3, I know there's some teams there that went to the WNFC. And I mean, the offseason isn't over, so we'll see. But yeah, pretty much that's the overarching view of the WFA. There's three different tiers. There's between 60 and 70 teams. It's very bottom heavy with not very many teams D1, a pretty solid amount of D2 teams, then a more than needed amount of D3 teams. That's just my opinion. So that's kind of the breakdown of how that looks. So like I said, these aren't accurate numbers because things change over in off season, and they're still going to change. Things are still happening as we speak, and so it's kind of hard to keep that live. But what I'll say is there are a lot of good teams in the WFA. The reason that I'm talking about the WFA is because it is a, you know, national league from coast to coast. They do operations successfully year in and year out. They do have a lot of things figured out, like, you know, tracking stats. They have a, you know, website that's pretty organized. They've been doing this for a long time, and so they have a lot of stuff figured out, and it goes pretty smoothly for them. But just to highlight some of the teams, I would say in the Division One for them, the best team by far is the Boston Renegades. They have been around for about 5 years. Another top team is the DC Divas. They have a nice little rivalry over there. So in Division One, those are kind of the top two in my opinion. This year's championship was Boston Renegades against the California team, and Boston beat them pretty handily. And so I think it's reasonable to say that DC might be the second best team in D1, even though they're both in East Coast. Anyways, moving on to D2. D2 has been owned, and I do mean owned, for the past 4 years by a team called the St. Louis Slam. Now, when I say 4 years, they won back-to-back titles, and then they took a year off, and then they came back this last year and won another title. So, when I was with my former team, actually, now that I think about it, it was the last game I ever coached for them. When I was with them, our last game of that season was against the St. Louis Slam. We played in St. Louis, and the winner of that game would go to the D2 championship, and we lost. I think that game was somewhere around maybe 42 to 21, roughly. But yeah, St. Louis has won three championships in 4 years, and they've done it convincingly. And so they're, in my opinion, by far the best team in Division II in the WFA. Some other teams I like to highlight for you: Minnesota Vixen is also a really solid team. They actually gave St. Louis a really tough game in the playoffs this year. Detroit Dark Angels, they're intriguing because they weren't that good in previous years recently, but this year, man, they came on strong. They had a really good record, and they in the playoffs, they were playing the Pittsburgh Passion, which Pittsburgh Passion, man, that's like a juggernaut of a team. They've been around for a long time. They were a D1 team that kind of changed ownership, and so that's why they dropped down to D2. And Detroit beat Pittsburgh in Pittsburgh, which I would have bet you a lot of American dollars that wouldn't have happened, but it did. And so kudos to Detroit. They defied all odds, beat Pittsburgh, and they were able to represent the East Coast in the championship game this year against St. Louis Slam. Another team that I like in Division II besides Pittsburgh Passion is the Tampa Bay Inferno. I actually have them on my list to interview. They weren't in the playoffs this year, which I think is a really big shame. The WFA uses what's called a Massey ranking system. It's like a computer mathematical system that, like, you know, calculates your scores and who you played and stuff like that, and then it ranks you that way. So according to Massey, Tampa Bay was one of the teams that didn't get into the playoffs, and I think that was really unfortunate because Tampa Bay is really good. They definitely deserve to be in, and it just was a matter of Massey, you know, the math not being there, I guess. So that's unfortunate. So that's D2 teams I like to highlight for you. Moving on to D3, the team that won the championship this year is called the Nevada Storm. I was very impressed with them. I went to that game. I was there in person. It was in Denver, so I was able to watch these in person. But Nevada Storm won the championship. They played the Orlando Anarchy, and Orlando Anarchy are also very good. I was blown away, man. They probably traveled with somewhere between 15 and 17 players to the championship game. Now, keep in mind, this is 11-on-11 football. They traveled with 15 to 17 players and then played a Nevada Storm team that had, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30, and they just stuck around. I mean, they just wouldn't give up, didn't stop fighting, and, Nevada didn't really pull away until maybe the fourth quarter. So Orlando's a really good team, really well coached, really good players, just a really high-quality team for D3 especially. The next team I like to highlight is the Southern Oregon Lady Gades. They were another team that weren't in the playoffs, and according to my opinion, should have been. So that's another thing that was unfortunate. They definitely deserve to be in. They're a quality team. I mean, they had some quality wins. I don't really understand even how the math added up to them not getting in, but they weren't. But they're quality regardless, and so I wanted to bring them up. The last two teams I like to highlight for you is Derby City Dynamite and the Music City Misfits. So the Derby City Dynamite have been a decent team in the past, but this year they kind of turned the corner and they were much better than past years. And so I think they were undefeated or maybe had one loss going into most of the season. And then there was a game where they were going to play Orlando. And I was like, okay, this is where we really see, you know, what Derby City is made of, if they're the real deal. And unfortunately, you know, Orlando kind of handled them, and so that was unfortunate. I'm a fan of the Dynamite. I know their owner, but you know that just kind of lets them know where they're at right now, where they need to be in the future. And lastly, the Music City Misfits. They're not a very well known team, but I know them because I'm a nerd, and they also I thought deserved to be in the playoffs, but they weren't according to Massey, and so that was also unfortunate. But I thought they had some quality wins, and when you saw who did get in the playoffs, I think that they had more of an argument to be in over them. So, just my two cents. You can take it or leave it. But yeah, that's pretty much a quick overview of the WFA and the WNFC. So, yeah, like I said, WNFC about 20 teams, WFA between 60 and 70 teams. The cool thing is whoever's listening to this, no matter where you live in the United States, there's probably a team close to you. So if you want to play tackle football, if you're a woman, 18 years or older, you can play. Period. No excuses. And so look up your local team. Go to WNFC's website. Go to WFA's website. You know, go to one of these Facebook pages and ask around about what teams are close to you. You can go to a tryout. And it's going to cost you money. You know, it can be a little bit expensive at first to buy the equipment, you know, helmet, shoulder pads, etc. But when, you know, when you ask the question, is it worth it? Hell yeah, it's worth it. You kidding me? Playing the best game on the planet. So, with that being said, I think we've touched on all the basics there. Before I get into my interview is with Molly Goodwin. She's the owner of the Boston Renegades, who are the best team in the WFA. And so, two things before I play the interview for you. The first thing is, there's a third league that I haven't talked about that's new. It's called the WFLA, and they are a new league that's saying that they're going to pay their players, saying that they're giving millions of dollars on signing bonuses for drafts and stuff like that. A lot of it sounds, you know, crazy. Like, to go from where we're at with women's football right now to that just seems like a really far stretch. And so I'm kind of like, you know, type of guy, I'll believe it when I see it. But that's what they're saying they're going to do. And so if they do that, that's awesome. And I'm super impressed, and I can't wait to see, you know, women get paid to play football. But, you know, I need to see it to believe it. And the last thing is, for this interview, I'm going to apologize ahead of time. Interviews were kind of brutal this week, but I was really, really stoked that Molly Goodwin joined me for the interview. But the two things I'm going to warn you about is the cell phone service for my side isn't great, and so I apologize ahead of time for that. And then also, unfortunately, the call dropped in the middle of the interview, and so I had to call right back. And so you guys will listen to the first part of the interview, then I'll pull up the second part, I'll make fun of myself, we can finish it, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up. So try to not judge me too much, but I hope you guys enjoy.
And I'd like to welcome Molly Goodwin to the podcast. This is the second ever TL Talks podcast. And so, Molly, first of all, thank you for making time for me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me, Terry.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, first thing I want to just let my listeners know about is how we know each other. So, with my former team that I was coaching, that team was in the WFA. And originally, I was thinking about today, I was like, man, I know that I've seen Molly at least three separate times. And I remember the first time I was able to talk to her more than any other times, but I was trying to remember because my memory isn't as good as it should be. And then it finally dawned on me. So I'm not even sure if you remember this, but I remembered it today. So the first time we met was during a WFA championship weekend, and it was like, I want to say, maybe before or after the championship game, and I had the pleasure of speaking with you and the owner of the Chicago team, and we kind of had a really cool conversation, you know, just about women's football and our teams developing and kind of, you know, the competitive spirit. And I was kind of crying to you guys about, you know, getting spanked by teams like Utah, and you guys kind of looked at me like, dude, get your act together. And that was one of our first combos. And then I'm pretty sure I saw you at least two other WFA championship weekends after that in person. I was able to give you a hug, I think, in Atlanta. You guys won that one. So, but yeah, so we've seen each other a few times over the years. We've been able to stay in touch a little bit. So since you guys
I appreciate it. You know, I appreciate that you are attending the championships and that you reached out to us and that we've maintained that friendship. And I think it's important that we're all trying to support our championships and one another and to learn more about what everybody's doing, even if it's good, bad, or ugly. And yeah, I really appreciate that, Terry.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm a human like anybody else, and so I have opinions like anybody else, and you know, there's no league that's perfect, you know, there's always room for improvement. But more importantly than that, I'm just a huge fan of the sport. You know, I breathe football. I've become completely in love with women's football in particular since I started coaching it, and so whenever there's a chance for me to watch it at the highest level, you know, when it's the best teams playing, then since I usually have a few dollars in my pocket, you know, I try to make it happen. But yeah, it's all my pleasure. Honestly, you guys are the superstars. I'm just a spectator. But yeah. So anyway, that's how we know each other. And first of all, I'd like to start. My first question for you is, if you don't mind, just give us a little bit of your background. I don't know that much about you myself. I know that you were a former player. I know that you're actually, I don't know your official title with the Boston Renegades. I'm pretty sure you're the owner or maybe one of the owners, but I know you do a lot of stuff for Boston. I know you get a lot of shit done. And so if you don't mind telling us your official title with the Boston Renegades and just your background, you can tell me, you know, where you're from, where you went to school, if you went to college, got a degree, your playing background, and then your current roles, if you don't mind.
Sure. I am the owner of the Boston Renegades, and for the most part, I'm pretty entangled in the obligations that it takes to run the organization, but I try to dabble in a little bit of coaching here and there where I can. My background, I played linebacker in the league in the IWFL for some years and then ended my career in the WFA. Most of my career I played middle linebacker, and I had the honor of playing for the Mass Mutiny originally, and then I played for the Boston Militia. And I grew up in Denver, Colorado, went to college at UC Berkeley. I played a little soccer in college, played 15 years of Ultimate Frisbee, and then was fortunate enough to find tackle football. Had a 9-year career, and I'm just sad that I couldn't have found football earlier because I would have loved to have seen what my 20-year-old body could have done playing football. But I feel honored to still be a part of it. And there's, like you said, all of us that are involved with any of these teams, we wear a lot of different hats, and I don't think there's any one thing that I do. We're juggling a lot of different things, but we hope to continue to build each year on what we're doing. And we also need to focus on making sure we're helping the league build and other teams build. So we're really fortunate to be in that position. And we are continuing to push. We have our owners meeting here in a couple of weeks in Chicago, and we're looking to continue to build with, like I said, the other teams in the league.
Very cool. Very cool. Yeah. So I guess a good place to start with, before I ask you some more general questions about, the state of women's football in general, and some questions about other leagues and other teams that I would love to see you guys play. Some more specific questions. So the first one I'd like to start with is you mentioned the Mass Mutiny, right? That was a team before the Militia?
That was my team before the Militia. There were a few other teams here in the New England area, but that was the team I played for, yes.
Gotcha. Yeah, so as you know, I entered the women's football scene about 6 years ago, and before that I was completely naive, like most American citizens, about, the whole world of women's football. So I've done a decent job of keeping myself, pretty plugged in. Not so much. I don't know that much about the history. I've of course heard about certain teams, like there's the Dallas Diamonds, and there's a couple other ones that were, really good before I started coaching. But I don't know that much about the history. So tell me a little bit about the Mass Mutiny. Just what you thought of that team, the coaching, the quality of play, as it compares to Militia or the Renegades.
Well, let's just, first of all, the woman that owned the team, her name was Doc Sherry. Okay. And I think similar to a lot of teams, we are very fortunate to have somebody that's willing to spend the time, the energy, and ultimately their own personal money to allow us to play this game. So first and foremost, thank you, Doc Sherry. But, when I first started, I had no concept of the history either at that point. And to me, I was 35 years old, and I thought, well, I want to try this. I just want to say I played 1 year. I didn't really think that I could do it. I thought it was too old and too slow, and, let's just check it out. And so it wasn't until a little bit later in my career that I stopped like being pie-eyed and thinking, whoa, this is cool, where I started to realize how big the, how widespread football was, and that I understood that there were other leagues and some of the history behind it. And so in terms of the coaching, the coach that I played with for my last year of the Mass Mutiny, he was the coach that was with me the entire time through the Boston Militia. Yeah.
Okay.
And so to me, in my playing days, I didn't have a whole lot of diversity in coaching styles. My first year on the Mass Mutiny, I played for one coach, and then I played for Coach Beasley the whole rest of the time. I played for the U.S. national team and had a different coach for, you know, about 2 weeks. And then, and let's give a shout out to John for the national team. But so I didn't have a whole lot of, so it's hard for me to speak to what the coaching is like across the league. But what I can tell you is from the time I started to the time till today is that, like any other sport, the players are bigger, faster, stronger continuously. And as our sport has been around longer, we're getting better and better athletes, and athletes with, you know, more football knowledge, higher football IQ. So, you know, I think my teams from the early days would not be able to compete with the teams that we're seeing right now.
Gotcha.
At the highest level.
Yeah. This is based on natural progression of the athletes, basically.
And the coaching and the organizations. Yep.
Okay. All around. Got it. Okay. That brings me to my next subject, which is the militia. So when I got involved in women's football about 6 years ago, I'm kind of a nerd by nature. You know, I love football. I know a lot about NFL football and NCAA football. And so women's football was so new to me, and I was so, you know, green and had no idea about a lot of it. I just kind of dived in and just nerded it out. And so what I mean by that...
Well, nerds are in now, don't you know?
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's good. I might get a girlfriend now. So, so I started nerding out, and I just was, you know, trying to basically seek out the best teams, the best players. I wanted to watch them live, you know, and just like you said, we want to see the best of the best for the sport. And so I really thought that out. And the Boston Militia was definitely one of those teams, in my opinion. I'm just speaking for myself. But at the time, it was like Boston Militia, you know, D.C. Divas, Chicago Force was still around. And then out in the West Coast, I think it was the Cali War Angels and then a couple other teams. Oh, at that time, they still had Dallas Elite. And so, that you know, those were kind of the big teams, in my opinion. So, that being said, you know, when I first joined women's football, you guys were already the shit. And that's just my opinion. But tell me, I guess, my question is, if you don't mind, tell my listeners how the militia ended up eventually, you know, closing down operations, and then the Renegades were established, if you don't mind.
Well, I don't know a lot about why or the rationale behind the closing down of the militia.
Okay.
That's something that...
you can't speak to somebody else.
Yeah, you know, it was 8 years into the tenure of that owner, and maybe it just had just run its course. I'm not sure. But what I do know is that I had retired and wanted to coach, and the coaching opportunity that I had was in Chicago with John Konecki and Linda Boucher out in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And I had intended to be on their staff that year. And the militia owner decided to drop the team on very short notice. I guess he had gotten, what I do know is he had gotten some advice from his council around him that it would make sense to drop the team in a way that it would not allow another team to happen the following year. So that... in their opinion, they thought that the following team would crash and burn, and they didn't want his name to be anywhere near something of that nature. So he was advised to kind of wait till the last minute and let it go, and then maybe a year or so later another team would arise. And I was, at the time, I was in Chicago, and I received a phone call from some of the current players, actually from Vic Yeti, one of the current player, and some of the other players had spoken to us. And basically we rallied Mia Brickhouse and Aaron Baumgartner, two former teammates. Mm-hmm. And the three of us, at the time, Mia Brickhouse was living in the Bay Area in California, and Aaron was here in Boston, and I was in Chicago, and the three of us from our different parts of the country decided that we weren't going to let it die here in Boston. And as a matter of fact, that was 2015. The Boston Militia was the 2014 national champion. And so it just seemed, well, one, we wouldn't let Boston die, or football die here in Boston, but two, to not allow the team to have an opportunity to defend their titles just seemed completely wrong. And so, you know, our first year was a huge learning curve and decidedly probably a disaster in general, but our community rallied around us, and we thankfully, because we've had some deep roots and some really solid fans, we were able to make that year happen on short notice, and it was really incredible. And I think that the things that we hope to do and are trying to do, and I think that we're doing with the Renegades, is to make sure that we are ingrained in the community in a way that we know that that's our foundation, and that if we're going to make this sustainable in the long run, that we have to be ingrained in the community and our fan base. And yeah, it's not a very interesting story, but it's a story of everybody coming together, and here we are. This was our fifth season, and we thought we would do this for somewhere between, you know, 1 and 3 years, and like I said, this is the fifth year, and we're still going, so really happy about that, and hopefully we can keep building.
Yeah. Well, to say, you're speaking very modestly, so just so I can clarify to the listeners that aren't as educated about women's football as I am. The Boston Renegades, they just won the WSA championship this year. I believe you guys won it last year as well, right?
That's correct.
And so out of the 5 years you guys have been established, you've won it how many times, the championship?
Twice,
okay. So you've been in... Well, last year you beat the L.A. Warriors pretty decisively. This year you beat a team similar, in Cali War, pretty decisively. But you were in at least one other championship, right? Was it the...
We were, versus the Dallas Elite.
Okay, was that... You've been in three then, total?
Correct.
Gotcha, okay. So Dallas barely beat you.
We made a rally at the end, but really they handled us. Unfortunately, their team has fallen apart. Well, not fallen apart, but has split into two, and we've never gotten that rematch that we would love to see. But yes, that was in 2017, and for the most part, they handled us, and we did not show up to play. And thankfully for us, we had a chance to come back in 2018, and we didn't get a chance to play them, but we had a chance to redeem ourselves, and we're really thankful for that.
Yeah, how was that? The Dallas-Boston game, then I was at the Boston-LA game, and then I did not go to this year's game because... It was bad, and no offense, but I didn't really think that it was going to be that competitive. And so, you know, I had already been stadium all day. I'd watched, you know, the D2 championship and watch some of the All-Star game, headed it, you know, online instead. But that game was actually interesting. So I don't know how much you pay attention to or how much you hear about stuff on Facebook. But sometimes just for fun, I'll do like predictions, you know, for football because I'm a little bit of a nerd. And I did predictions for the playoffs in WFA, and I had you guys winning pretty big. I think it was something like somewhere around, I don't know, 54-6.
Okay.
And so that's what I thought of you guys, and that's what I thought of Cali War. But that game actually, you know, was more interesting than I thought it was going to be. So in the beginning, as you know, Cali War came out guns a-blazing and kept the, you know, the first half or the first quarter pretty competitive. And then, you know, towards the first half and second half, you guys kind of hit your stride and it was a smooth sailing from there. And then the score ended up being, they ended up scoring about what I said for the points, but they just had, they had scored more in the first half than what I predicted. My question for you is, how that game went, I mean, team strength, or do you think it just, you played their ass in the first half, or they had some good coaching or a good game plan, or what do you think?
Yeah, Terry, I hate to do this to you. You're breaking up a little bit on me. Can you ask that question again?
Yeah, absolutely. Sorry about that. So,
okay.
My question was, would you say my prediction, and the game going a little bit differently, and Cali scoring a little bit more than I thought, I'm thinking it pretty interesting in the beginning of the game. Would you say I did a job of, assessing this as far as or would you say that it's more they just came out, with a good game plan or great coaching, or, what would you attribute that to? Because in the beginning it was a lot different than the rest of the game. So what is your opinion?
I really want to they have a really good team of terrific athletes. And if you recall, there was a delay in the start of the game that I think, they responded better to that than we did. And we had a turnover and a couple of quick three and outs, and they capitalized on those opportunities. However, I think their game plan was strong. Our game plan was strong. We just weren't executing. And, we were able to make some adjustments and obviously then hang on to the football and establish our running game a little bit. And once we were able to do that and make some adjustments, I think our coaching staff showed what the caliber that they are. And, I really commend Cali.
So guess what happened at that moment, TL Talks listeners? The call dropped. So it's actually the first time I've heard that interview, and all I can do is apologize. My phone reception breaking up, she can't hear me. So, some of my voice is going in and out. It's like, for fuck's sake, TL, get your life together. So this is what I'll say. This is my second ever podcast, second ever interview, and just give me some time to figure shit out, okay? Give me a little bit of grace, a little bit of, a bit of understanding. I do live in a house that's mostly made of brick. It's not great for cell phone service, but if I need to go somewhere else for my interviews, that's fine. If I need to buy another house, I'm just kidding. But I called her right back, and we picked up where we left off, so I apologize for that, and hopefully the second half of the interview isn't as cringeworthy as that first path was.
Hey there.
Yeah, I've got all my bars, so I don't know. I don't think it's something on my end.
It's my fault. Okay, so pick up where you just left off. So you're saying that they have a really good team, and you guys held on to the ball got your running game going, your coaching staff kind of, you know, showed their caliber, and go ahead and go from there.
Yeah, I think we made some good adjustments, and I think, you know, at the end of the day, we're just a little bit deeper. So with that game dragging out till the wee hours of the night, and they had some big injuries, and, you know, just the time in general on the field, I think our depth as we get into the third and fourth quarter was the difference.
Gotcha. Gotcha. I think that's a very fair assessment. And I love, by the way, how humble you are. That's I mean, I'd be the same way. I'm a humble dude myself, but you guys are a phenomenal team. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to, you know, kiss your butt, but you guys are phenomenal. You're arguably the best team in America. And so, I mean, you really are, you guys do set the standard for sure in the WFA, if not the, you know, the entire U.S. As far as, you know, from a coaching level, from a player level, the way you guys run your organization, it just really is top notch across the board.
So, I appreciate that. You know, I think part of it too is that we come from a long history of really strong teams on the East, and we are the you know, we benefit from the fact that we play consistently good teams. Like, although Chicago's not there anymore, we are built on the back of playing Chicago, playing DC, playing Pittsburgh, playing, you know, that caliber. So when we go down 12-0 in the first quarter, that means nothing to my team. That means we just got to dig in. We have to execute. We have to make a couple of changes, and here we go. We still have three quarters to play, and, you know, we're used to being in those kinds of scrappy situations, and that is a testament not only to our players who, you know how to not get flustered by that, but a testament to the teams that we play and the teams that push us to be there and be in that kind of four-quarter shape and understand that this thing is going to go down to the wire. It could go down to the last possession, and, you know, every timeout counts, every yard counts, every situational decision counts. And that has as much to do with our other the other teams in our division as it does with our players. So it's really, I keep coming back to it. It's, you know, we need to continue to build our league and build our competition and build our program so that, you know, that a team isn't coming from the West that hasn't been challenged until the playoffs, right?
Yeah.
So, and I know that's cyclical. It could turn where, you know, next year all of the good teams are coming out of the West, but we need to make it so that there are at least a handful of good teams on both sides, and everybody's getting tested in a way that by the time you get to the playoffs, you know, you've had a few of these under your belt. And like I said, we're just lucky enough to have had not only a few of them under our belt this year, we've had them for several years. At least the 5 years that I've been here with the Renegades and the many years that I played with the Militia. So we're very fortunate. And we're also very fortunate to have consistency in our coaching staff and consistency at our quarterback position, because in this league, really the quarterback can make or break you.
Oh, who are you telling? Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you. That's a very fair point. Yeah, I mean, when I was involved with the WFA, you know, it was the East, you know, the East was by far kind of had the juggernauts, you know, aside from Dallas Elite, kind of all the heavy hitters were on the East Coast with Chicago, DC, and you guys. And
Pittsburgh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pittsburgh. And I mean, they're still a very good team, too. I'll probably just be one year in Division II. And so that, you know, like you said, that group of Pittsburgh, Boston, D.C., and Chicago on the East, it just was very formidable for a long time and still is, really. I mean, Chicago's the only one that isn't around anymore. And so, like you said, just being battle-tested, right, and playing those really hard teams in the regular season and then in the playoffs, and so you've already had those tough moments before you get to the big dance is really beneficial. So it's good. But like you said, we need more of it. We need to build up a sport so that we have more teams like that.
Well, you know, we have our next tier, really, of teams that are coming and that are not only good teams, but they're great organizations. And you're talking about Minnesota Vixen, you're talking about St. Louis Slam, the in Tampa Bay Inferno coming along with their group, Tanya in Baltimore, that caliber of organization and players and what have you, and we need to continue to build those teams and their opportunities and those rivalries, right? So maybe we lost to Chicago, but we started to play Tampa Bay this year, and like, let's make that our new rivalry. And we still have DC, and Pittsburgh's coming back into the fold, and we need to start to make some new rivalries.
Absolutely. I'm with you. So my next question is kind of a threefold question. So if you don't mind, give us a little bit of a sneak peek. I'm not asking for, you know, all your secrets, but give us a little sneak peek, because I am a big fan of your guys's into the coaching, recruiting, and foreign players, the combination of those three things, right? So coaching, your coaching staff's phenomenal. Recruiting, obviously, you guys have done a decent job at that. And then I think there was at least one foreign player that played for you guys in the ship, right? The was her name Ruth Mata?
Yeah, she was the MVP. She was not just a player. She played. She's a 5-foot phenom. She's an incredible player, and it's just, I think, really great to see that there's that kind of talent all around the world, and it's just a matter of having an opportunity to showcase it and be with. You know, she plays, I think, 7 or 8 aside over there in England, and one of the reasons she wanted to come was to be able to play 11 aside football. And so I think, you know, we take it for granted that we have this opportunity, and we always want more. But, I mean, she's just a phenomenal talent, and it's fun for everybody to get to see her.
Yeah, absolutely. So what can you tell me, if you don't mind? I know you're a modest person, but tell me about the coaching and recruiting, and then is Ruth Mata the only foreign player, or did you have more than just her on the team?
Oh, we had 3 foreign players this year. We had Ruth, and then we had another woman named JJ that's from Finland, and then a third player from Germany, Reiki. And, there's no secret sauce except for, you know, good people. And we have, in my opinion, the best general manager in the league. His name is Ben Brown, and this man never stops moving, never stops hustling, and his job, aside from being our general manager, is recruiting, and he does it year-round. And I, like I said, there's no secret sauce, but what I will tell you is if somebody expresses interest with our team, he is that in communication with them, I'm going to say within 2 hours, and is already, you know, what's next, almost to the point where he's stalking these people because he wants an answer. He's like, you said you were interested, so here's all the information. What else do you need to know, and how can I facilitate it? And until you tell me no, I'm coming after you.
Yeah.
And, and I also, in fairness, having won the championship a couple of times, It becomes easier because people are looking at you. But I would tell you that if you don't have somebody in your organization that is dedicated solely to recruitment 100% of the time, you're not going to get anywhere. You're not going to get where you want to be. And we're just really, really fortunate that we have that caliber of professionalism and work ethic, but just an incredible human being in Ben Brown. And the work that he does in making sure that we constantly have new people coming in. I would say these last, over the 4 or 5 years that we've had the team, except for maybe the first year because we didn't have a off-season or a recruiting season.
Yeah.
I think we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 to 30 people try out, of which I think every year we have about 10 to 12 that actually stay with us, pay dues and play with us, which is probably 2 times more at least than we ever had with when we were on the militia. And that's a group that had money to actually back and pay somebody to recruit, and they didn't do it. So, you know, it's just you need to put an emphasis on it. You need to have somebody that really cares about what they're doing, cares about the people, cares about the program. And Ben is one of a kind, and we wouldn't be where we are without him. Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt.
Gotcha.
And then in terms of our coaching staff, John Johnson's our head coach, and he and Vern Crawford, the two of them are Vern's our offensive coordinator, but in our off season, they coach high school together, and Vern's the head coach, and Johnny's his defensive coordinator. First of all, they get along great, which, you know, when you get into some of these staffs, it's just really hard because the egos are big and the desire to want to do more and to have your voice heard.
Preach.
You know, so these two guys, they just work really well together, and I think that's because they also have the opportunity to flip the roles later in the year. And so they respect one another, and then they really respect the staff underneath them in a way that allows for growth and dissent at times and information. And, you know, we're continually trying to grow our staff. And I think the thing that I can say about Johnny as our head coach is that he wants to grow. He wants to grow himself. He wants to grow our team. And he wants to grow concept-wise, right? So he's constantly doing stuff and, you know, and trying to figure out how best to bring that information to a group of women, which is very different than group coaching men or boys at any level. So this is my fourth year with Johnny at the helm and Vern, and the core of our staff has been together for 4 years, and it's I actually played with Vern. He was one of our coaches on the militia, so I think only in the 15 years or so that I've been involved in football, only one or two of them have been without Vern. So he's been our constant. He's been our constant with, over that time period, with our quarterback, Allison Cahill. And that's huge. It's just huge.
Yeah, the consistency.
And then, we're trying to do the best we can to bring in former players so that we have women on the staff. And we've got four women, actually, right now. And, we're just really lucky that there's the passion and the interest. But, you know, we have some women that have incredible football IQs. And it's the other part about Vern and Johnny is they not only want to, they love to teach these women. And they're not threatened. And they treat everybody like they're football players, not, you know.
You're not
Pop Warner. No. And it's there's a level of professionalism I think everybody appreciates, and so I think it's that, and it's the consistency over time.
Gotcha. It's all good stuff. I like it, Molly. So I don't want to take too much of your time. So I have three things I want to touch on before I let you go. So the first question is, what would you say about the state of women's football in general right now? Whether in the U.S. or overseas, through your own eyes, you know, just Molly's opinion, what would you say about where we're at currently?
Well, I would say I didn't know much about what was happening overseas. I played in, for the national team in 2010, and I followed it in 13 and 17. So you get a sense of sort of the caliber of what the other countries, the caliber of football that they're playing, but you don't get a sense of what's happening. And until we had our foreign players over the last couple of years, that's been an eye-opener in the visibility and the work that's being done over there. It's really commendable, especially, you know, when they are as passionate as we are and willing to play short-sided and smaller fields and travel all over the place and play year round and come across the ocean to, you know, to seek out better football. So I would love to get involved a little bit more in what's happening on the international scene. And that's been an amazing thing to see. And in particular to see that, you know, there are athletes that can compete on our level, like we saw in Ruth Modden. So it's awesome. And in terms of women's football, I think we have more teams in all the leagues combined than ever playing, which is fantastic. And I also know from some numbers that I saw while I was on the board at USA Football that one of the only demographics of football that's growing is women and girls. And so that's a phenomenal statement as to what's happening around the country and internationally. And, you know, I think there are, like you said, there's no league that's perfect and there are growing pains, but what I know, and I can only say what I know about our league, is that that we are dedicated to making this the best league possible in terms of the best competition, and our ownership and across the board and the league is dedicated to trying to figure out how to make more teams more competitive, and that we bring parity at a deeper level. And I think that we got to continue to bring in community and youth and flag and all kinds of things. But mm-hmm. there's a lot of opportunity. And I think on the heels of the women's national, the U.S. women's soccer team and mm-hmm. everything that they're doing, you know, the eyes are on women right now and on women's sports and on women's opportunities. And mm-hmm. I think there couldn't be a better time for us to be pushing our agenda and continuing to grow from a youth level on up. So I'm really happy. I'm looking forward to it. And I know there's lots more good things to come for us.
Absolutely. Yeah, fair enough. So that's a good segue, actually. So speaking of being the best league, I have to ask you, so sorry if you don't like this question, but what is your opinion of the WNFC?
I really don't have one. I don't follow them. I don't know much about them. What I do know is that it's a group of people that is trying to do what they, in their opinion, is furthering football, furthering competition, and furthering an agenda that they think is slightly different than what we're doing. And, you know, I think that's great. I obviously would be better for all of us if we were all in one league, whatever that league would be. But at the end of the day, like I said, I think they're trying to do the best that they can. And I wish them luck. But where we are, I hope that we do the best that we can. And that at some point in time, there can be a league that is promoting the best football at the highest level at a rate that maybe someday we can have sponsorship and not have to pay to play, which would be great.
Gotcha. Okay. So I hear what you're saying, and I don't think you're lying to me per se, but let me just make sure I'm hearing you correctly. You're saying that you don't know much about the WNFC, like you don't know much about what they're doing or their sponsorships or, you know, them paying players of the week and stuff like that. You're not privy to that stuff?
You know what? I'm not on Facebook. I don't follow any real social media. And also, truly, and I'm not just being coy here, I truly don't care what they're doing. Because
just my not your time, league, so.
They're a competition at some level, but not really. They're not. Until they are a little bit more mature and have some real, you know, that not just two teams that compete, then we can talk. But and I don't want to be their competition. I want us all to be together and compete with each other. But, you know, there's so much work to be done here with our league, not only our league, but our team. I can't get caught up in it, and it's a little bit of a drama, right? And
gotcha. I'm not trying to.
And I appreciate what you're saying, but, you know, as long as I've played, there's been different leagues and what have you, and you know, it's just too much to be worried about what other people are doing. I want our organization to be a leader and to a role model and to continue to better ourselves and the people around us. And if we do that, and every team tries to do that, then at the end of the day, we're going to end up where we need to be. And I can't get caught up on what anybody else is doing, whether they're in our league or not.
Gotcha. Yes, no, that's totally fair. Basically, what we're saying is that first and foremost, you're worried about your own backyard, right? You're worried about
Absolutely.
The Boston Renegades and maintaining what you are and building from there and getting better every year. And then,
let's make no mistake about it. I have a financial stake in this, so this is a business. this is not something that I'm here just to do for fun or just for championships. I'm here to not lose money.
Yeah.
Let's be very frank. Nobody's making money at this. I'm here not to lose money and to give my players the best opportunity that they can that they can have to be the best players and most competitive wherever we go, whoever we play, you know. And so, yeah, it's a full-time hustle to make sure that I can do my day job, my paying job, in a way that doesn't fire me, and that I can enjoy and be good at as well, and that I can not only take care of what we're doing, but trying to add different stuff each year and handle our business, because this has my name on it. It has our name on it, and like I said, make no mistake about it, it's a business, and I'm very myopic when it comes to the things that we're doing and trying to make us the best that we can be.
Gotcha. You're only concerned with what involves you and the Boston Renegades and the WFA.
Well, at a certain level, the Boston Renegades. I mean, that,
yeah,
and then secondarily, I would say the league, and then within that, you know, what's happening in the East, because those are the teams that I'm going to be playing and traveling. And as I said to you before, those are the teams that make us who we are. So we need these teams to be good. So we're focused on helping them and best practices. And at some point, you know what? The tables will be turned, and we will have lost our quarterback, and we may not be the best team, and we're going to need their help. And so it's about fostering those relationships and all those kinds of things. And God, yeah, like you said, Terry, at the end of the day, there aren't enough hours to be worried about what another team in another league on the other side of the country is doing, you know?
Yeah, I gotcha. You got your hands full with what you're doing in your own backyard. I understand. Okay, last question before I let you go. You might not answer this question, but I'm going to ask it anyways. So speaking of there being, quote-unquote, you know, two pretty good teams in the WNFC, obviously the team that won that league this year is the Texas Lead Spartans, and they're, you know, most of their team is the team that you guys played, you know, a few years ago in that championship game. So when I said earlier that you guys are arguably the best team in the nation, in my opinion, this is just, you know, just me speaking, the only team that you could even argue is on your level, in my opinion, is probably the Dallas Lead Spartans, or the Texas Lead Spartans. So with that being said, I know you're only concerned about yourself and your league, but how realistic or unrealistic is it to have a champ versus champ game in the off season, just to kind of have an undisputed champion?
At this point, I think it's probably very unrealistic. But it's, you know, it's not out of the question, and it wouldn't be, we wouldn't be opposed to it, let's put it that way. But it would have to be figured out in a way that wasn't just for show, if you know what I mean, because we've got athletes who are putting their bodies on the line.
Of course.
And, you know, it can't just be like, well, let's play the two champs in March when nobody's played, you know, people are just getting up and running again. And for us, we would love to be undisputed, and I'm sure they would too. And like I said to you earlier, we would love a rematch with them. But I don't, you know, I just don't know how realistic it is in the confines of our two competing seasons, and frankly cost wise. So as I was just saying to you before, with the business, like, if we're going to spend that kind of money, why wouldn't we spend it doing something within something that's going to help us build what we're doing over here? So it's not out of the question, and as everything progresses and ends, their league grows and our league is doing different stuff, we could ultimately meld Division Ones into one sort of category between the two leagues. And it could be our, you know, Division One having our, working our way up, and the championship actually is us versus their league. It could end up being something like that, but the current layout doesn't really lend itself to that financially or physically. But, yeah, I think at the end of the day, there is nobody that's playing football, I don't care if you're a man or a woman, that doesn't, if you're a passionate competitor that doesn't want to be the best of the best. So it doesn't matter where you are or who you are, we want to play everybody. And I'm sure they feel the same way. So, like I said, it would be great if we were all together, and it's just, unfortunately, that's not the situation. So is that likely? Right now, it just isn't.
Yeah. That's totally fair, yeah. For where we're at right now, it's not realistic, but in the future, you know, like you said, depending on how things go or how it's formatted or, you know, when it is during the year, there's just a lot of different variables that have to make sense for both teams to do it. And so that's just what it comes down to. That's totally fair. Yeah. That's it. That's a very fair answer. I appreciate that. See, I don't want to hold you up any longer, but I really appreciate your time once again.
Thank you, and thank you for the interest in the team and the league and everything that everybody's doing. It's really nice to have an opportunity to talk to you about it, and it's, you know, and for us to continue our friendship.
Absolutely, yeah, it's my pleasure, truly. Before I let you go, just if you want to plug anything, this is your free shot. So if there's a website, if there's a Facebook page, whatever you want to do, have at it, because my platform is your platform.
Yeah, great. Well, we're at BostonRenegadesFootball.com, and I'm sure we have a Facebook page out there, which is Boston Renegades.
You're not on?
No, somebody else runs that for us, but I know we have a Facebook page. We have our tryouts. We have our off-season training activities, which also we incorporate our tryouts into that. And our first one is Saturday, September 28th in Revere at our home stadium, and then we also have two more following that, which are October 12th and November 2nd. So anybody that's interested in playing, come on out. We'd love to have you. And we have everybody from first-time players to college athletes that are looking to continue their careers. But if you're interested and willing to work hard, we'll show you how to play.
All right. Fair enough. Well, like I said, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. I appreciate your time. And I'll talk to you soon, okay?
All right. Great. Thanks, Terry.
Take care.
And there you have it. And let me just tell you, since this is the first time I've been listening to this, thank the Lord that the second half of the interview went smoothly as far as how you can hear it. Because the first part was rough, man. I mean, you guys are probably aren't as critical as I am, or maybe you are. We'll see. But, yeah, just like, you know, having the bad cell phone service, stuff like that. I just have to figure that out ASAP to make sure that there's, you know, no break in communication. But second half sounded pretty decent. So hopefully you guys are happy with that. I was thrilled to be able to interview Molly Goodwin. Like she said, she's the owner of the Boston Renegades, who are, if not one of the best, you could say arguably they are the best team, not only in the nation, but probably the world, to be honest with you. Unless you're talking about like Team USA, you know, or these teams that are kind of thrown together with a bunch of all-stars. As far as a team, you know, from a city that has, it, you know, their own players and they're not from everywhere, they arguably are the, you know, the top of the top in the world. And so you literally just heard from the owner of the best team, if you know, arguably the best team in the world when it comes to women's tackle football. So pretty cool stuff. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I'm definitely going to talk to you guys next week. I already have my guests lined up for that interview as well. But yeah, that's about all I got for you. So if you have any questions, please reach out to me. Just in closing, the only thing that I'm really behind on is the summit. So for the summit, I told you guys last podcast what it's about, what the plan is. And honestly, I just need to advertise it more. And so I'm going to start doing that this week, probably this weekend, and try to, you know, see if I can recruit some good candidates for the first summit. But I am considering moving that summit back maybe 1 month, because honestly, I'd rather do it later and give you a good product than do it sooner and give you a crappy product. That's just the way I roll. So stay tuned for that. We'll see what happens. But yeah, in conclusion, just for you that didn't listen to the first podcast, what the summit is it's an intentional meeting of two people with opposing viewpoints that are going to meet face to face at a public place and talk to each other, talk out their differences. And I'm going to be the mediator. So we have three summits lined up for now. The first summit is pro-Trump versus anti-Trump. Second summit is trans athletes inclusion versus trans athletes exclusion. And the third summit is women's tackle football versus lingerie women's football. And so those are the first three summits. So if you're interested, make sure you tune in. I'll keep you guys posted on if I need to postpone that first one. But I can assure you that I'm going to do it with good quality. And you can go to my website, which is tltalkswithaz.com, to apply for to be a guest on the podcast or one of the people on one of the summits. And then I can reach out to you to interview you. We can go from there. But hope to talk to you guys soon. Like I said, appreciate your time. Hope you guys have a good day. See ya.